Good morning. We are talking with U.S. Representative Derek Van Orden and Prairie du Chien Police Chief Kyle Tenor. It's going to throw me off again today. I'm going to start thinking that it's Saturday again, that I've got coffee with Kyle going. But instead, we're just going to do a quick interview. There was a big event that happened last Saturday. A guy by the name of Donald Trump was here in Prairie du Chien. And, you know, Kyle, we've talked about this on your show, immigration, hot button topic. Wisconsin is a swing state. We had an incident here with an illegal immigrant. So Derek, I guess I will ask you this, as you are up for election in November.
Right.
It's very clear that, illegal immigrants are not just in big cities along the borders. Like, they are seeping into rural America. Even if you close the border today, what can the administration, what can you do as a U.S. representative to help those law enforcement agencies in rural communities that just don't have the resources to deal with that? I know one thing that Kyle and I have talked about, like, their officers don't speak Spanish.
Right.
So what can be done at a federal level, because this is a federal issue, to help those, you know, rural communities deal with this issue?
Well, that is an outstanding question.
I worked really hard on it.
Did you? That's good. Well, your work is paying off.
This is my master's degree right there.
That's great. A lot of folks truly don't understand the separation of powers that are built into the Constitution. So the Congress is Article 1, the executive branch is Article 2, the judicial branch is Article 3. So how the government is designed to work is that Article 1 writes laws. That's us, and writes funding for the government. And then the funding and those laws are applied by the executive branch. The check comes in for the checks and balance, not just the appropriate separation of powers, when someone thinks that a law does not comport with the Constitution. And that's when the judicial branch comes in and says, this is unconstitutional. So the issue is not, it doesn't reside with Article 1 authorities any longer, and it has not for a really long time, for at least 3.5 years. It's a function of the executive branch. So the executive branch, the Biden administration, Harris as the borders are, willingly and knowingly reversed every policy that Donald Trump had for the border and opened up the borders. And they don't need any more money. They don't need any more authorities. They have everything they need to resecure the borders because it became unsecured when they simply reversed Donald Trump's policies. So this resides squarely on the shoulders of the executive branch. Now, the red herring that the Democrat Party's throwing out is saying, hey, they shot down this bipartisan bill in the Senate. There was one senator named Lankford that got thrown under the bus by Mitch McConnell. The bipartisanship there was one senator negotiating this bill. And it would have allowed 5,000 illegal immigrants to enter the country every day. It legalized citizenship for tens of millions of people that are here unlawfully. It was a horrible bill. That's why it didn't even get out of the Senate. Now, that Republican-controlled House of Representatives passed something called H.R. 2. That's House Resolution 2. And it was the strongest border bill that would have passed in, I think, like 40 or 50 years. It gives more money to the ICE guys, the Customs and Border Enforcement, the Border Patrol, made sure that we had more rooms to house people that are getting shipped back to their country. And it re-implemented a bunch of the different plans that were put in place under President Trump. And it codified them. Not a single Democrat voted for it. Zero. 158 Democrats just voted to not make it mandatory to deport people in the country illegally who sexually assault people in the United States. 158 Democrats in the House of Representatives voted against that, which I don't know how you square that circle. And that comes back to what happened here in Prairie. So 158 Democrats voted to not deport the person that committed those vile crimes here in our little town. And that's just not okay. So we need to look at where the problem is, and the problem resides with the executive branch right now, not the legislative branch. And they're trying to pull a hokey-doke on everybody. If they really wanted the border secure, they would have picked up H.R. 2, which we passed last May, like May of last year we passed that. But they ignored it because it wasn't an issue then, And now the only reason Kamala Harris went to the border, and by the way, she was there for 19 minutes for a photo op. The only reason she's doing that now is because she is realizing she's getting destroyed in the polls because everybody's opening up their eyes to what the problem is.
Now, Kyle, I know you and I have talked a little bit I think we all like to believe we are isolated here in Prairie du Chien. And we've talked at length about this before, illicit drug use and fentanyl and even immigrants. Like, we like to believe we're in our own little country and our own little corner of Wisconsin, and we're kind of isolated from that stuff. But you have seen, fentanyl use firsthand. You've seen the struggles you're staffed with. I know we talked about this off air that, you can bring in an interpreter, but you don't have Spanish speaking, especially the different dialects that come in.
Yeah, I mean, I have officers who took, 4 years of Spanish in college, but they're not translators, and they can communicate, they can tell people where to put their hands, and they can ask them what their names are and those types of things, but in order to have a conversation, it makes it difficult. But the reality is on the ground, that's what it is. And there's a lot of talk in my agency, in particular, about how disconnected government has become to the people that are on the ground that are dealing with these issues. And I mentioned in my speech on Saturday, the heartbreak of telling families that their loved ones are dead. Well, the reality is we have done that over the last year. I've told little boys, listen, your father's passed away due to the poison that is fentanyl. And the reaction of a five-year-old boy, that is trauma on my officers as well. As traumatic as it is for that four-year-old or five-year-old to hear that news, that doesn't sit well with my cops either. And my cops take this personally. Like, this is the vast majority of my cops are from here. They take the success and failures of the day-to-day life in Prairie du Chien, they take it personally, and it's a personal issue for me, and as it should be. We can't remove ourselves from the connectivity that we have with our community, and that is what drives us every day to continue to work hard and try to make what little impact we can on the ground. And the reality is I appreciate the relationship that Representative Van Orden has made with me and our department in not losing that focus of the people that are in the community doing the work, needing that support, and sometimes just needing that pat on the back to say, hey, we know what you're doing, and it doesn't go unnoticed. So, it's real life. It's real life, and that's what our cops face every day.
Wait, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Kyle, when's the first time you had a fentanyl death here?
I remember it well, because it was shortly after our detective was diagnosed with a brain tumor, and I was temporarily assigned to be a detective. And it was our first overdose death. It was at the Super 8 Motel. It was in 2016, December of 2016.
Okay.
It was a gentleman who was originally from the area, had relocated to the Milwaukee area, became addicted, came back to the area to get clean. During his process of getting clean, he traveled back to Milwaukee for the weekend, picked up more product, came back on his way through, stopped at the Super 8 Motel, and overdosed. That investigation led back to the city of Milwaukee. I spent several weeks in the city of Milwaukee trying to track down his source of drug, and were able to but not able to bring charges. Since then, since 2016, we're averaging about 2 a year, and so far this year, I think we just went through our books, we're at 3. But I said in my speech before, yeah, 3 for Prairie du Chien is too many. 1 for Prairie du Chien is too many.
Yeah.
And that's the reality. It's very easy to say, well, this isn't a problem, we're only losing 3 people. But tell that to the families, right, of those 3 people.
If 3 people got killed in a roundabout, there would be people,
an uproar.
And we all know that fentanyl is not coming. It's not being manufactured here in Prairie du Chien.
Definitely not.
That's a fact.
Yeah.
So the precursor chemicals or the fentanyl itself are being manufactured in communist China.
Yes.
Then they're being shipped here, and if they're not already put together, they're being it's being manufactured at that point. The component parts are put together in Mexico. It's stamped into pills. It is sent in various forms, or it's it's in different variants, not just pills. And then it's literally walked across the open southern border. And then a lot of it is being shipped via the U.S. Post Office. And I've got a meeting with the Postmaster General to discuss this because we don't have the ability to detect it in mass. So let's remember, this is coming from China. It's going to Mexico, and it's literally being walked over the border. And I have to point this out because it took Harris 3.5 years, the border czar, to actually go to the border itself. Before, she was in El Paso. She's quite a distance away from the border. She spent 19 minutes there and gave a speech about how illegal immigration has got to stop, and we have to seal the border to stop this fentanyl stuff. And that is directly tied to politics, and that's pathetic. That's a problem. And that's, we just got to call a spade a spade. Plenty of stuff was screwed up under a whole bunch of different administrations, but you're talking about over 200,000 Americans have died in the last 3 years of fentanyl poisoning. That's four times as many people died in the entire Vietnam War in 3 years. That's the equivalent of a jumbo jet, you know, one of those massive jets crashing every single day. So if a jumbo jet crashed every single day, we would have dealt with this 3.5 years ago, right? But why are we not doing this? Because it doesn't fit a political agenda. And that's not how we work. And I'm going to compliment you guys. You were so incredibly down the middle, apolitical, when you were talking on that stage. I was very, very impressed. I mean, you covered this problem set in an objective manner, and it was really fantastic. I was really proud to call you my chief. What's up?
Well,
it was great. I mean, you were there, right?
I was there.
I'll just touch on what he said. He's seen war. I haven't seen war. But if this country was involved in a war with another country and we were losing 70,000 males or females between the age of 17 and 25, if we were losing 70,000 of those per year in a war, the American citizens would be screaming for us to stop this war.
If we lost 3 Prairie du Chien residents to war...
Yeah.
Flags would be at half. I mean, there would be ceremonies, pomp, and circumstance. Yeah. Rightfully so. Don't get me wrong.
Of course.
But you know that it's crazy to me, and I think from just an average Joe, most of us think fentanyl, and I think, well, I'm not a drug user. Fentanyl has no impact on me. Most of us think the border is how many thousand miles away. I'm safe up here. That has no impact on me. I don't see the influx of immigrants. That doesn't impact me until we have something like what happened a couple weeks ago, or you have a loved one that suffers with addiction and all of a sudden finds fentanyl.
I guarantee you there's not a single person listening to the show that doesn't know at least one person, or they're more than 2 degrees separated from someone that's been radically and horribly affected by fentanyl. Can I back up for 1 second though? Because we got to be real precise with our language. We want immigrants to come here. We want immigrants to come here lawfully and work. If foreign workers didn't come here to work, our agriculture industry, construction, and hospitality industry will shutter in a week. So we want people to come here. And there's a difference between migration, immigration, illegal immigration. So if people want to migrate here and they want to come here and immigrate and become an American citizen, that's one thing. And they're welcome to do that legally. If people want to come here and work, like a bunch of folks in our dairy industry and row croppers all over the place, and they want to be here for a period of time and then send money back through remittances, and they want to go back to, let's just say, Guatemala, they want to remain a Guatemalan citizen and work here, that's great too. We want that. What we don't want is someone to come here unlawfully. And I don't know if you're tracking the news, but the Biden administration, my buddy Tony Gonzalez, he's a congressman down in Texas. He asked a very simple question. How many people have come into this country with criminal records? The answer is 423,000 or 426,000 people who've been convicted of crimes in their home countries were allowed into the United States. That includes like 13,000 murderers and 15,000 rapists were allowed into the country. And I got all the numbers. If you add the people that have been convicted already with the people that are currently charged with it, it's like 600 and some thousand people were allowed into the country willfully. And that's not okay, including the dude. We sent a letter to Mayorkas. We're trying to figure out if the guy that committed that crime or those crimes here in Prairie was on that list because he had the gang tattoos when we went through the border crossing, or when he was first encountered.
But and
that's just a real number. I mean, to me, that's like, that is a showstopper.
I'll just speak from our experience here with this suspect. Listen, I don't hang my hat on us being the smartest, most qualified police department under the planet, right?
I do.
But if we can figure this out...
I only do radio shows with that's the just top-notch ones.
The frustration is if we can figure this out, if my staff can figure this out, if they can say, wait a second, that looks like something we've seen on an intelligence post.
Do you guys deal with a lot of Venezuelan gangs?
We don't.
No,
we
don't. So if you notice that...
We get this intel from ICE, and that's what drew us our attention to it. We had gotten an intelligence bulletin saying, hey, these are the things to look for. My staff looked at the tattoos and said, these look similar to this intelligence poster. And they said, wait a second. So they started taking pictures of it, and they sent it to our ICE contacts and said, hey, we think we're dealing with something here. They responded relatively quickly and said, we can't confirm. However, those tattoos are associated with this gang. You may be onto something. And 10 days later, the FBI got involved, and the FBI was interested in the case. And we ran it up the chain through the FBI channels, and they came back as well. They were initially skeptical, but they eventually came back and said, this is, we're tracking this, and this is the case. So this investigation continues because there are some alphabet soup, you know, organizations that are following up and doing, further interviews. So it's real stuff. And the numbers that Representative Van Orden just threw out there, from a law enforcement world, I don't know how we get a handle on that, with the intent of preventing further victimization.
And I don't know, again, what role does, the federal government, local government, have in getting resources to you so that the next time this happens, you have the resources here in Prairie du Chien or in whatever, small rural area in Wisconsin has to deal with the next instance.
Well, the first thing that has to happen is that the executive branch has to do their job, and that is to secure the border. We have a lady that's running for president right now who is the border czar for 3.5 years, and they've refused to secure the border until it became a political liability. That's the reality. And you can't play politics with public safety. You can't play
politics. We talk about that a lot.
Okay, and you can't play politics with food.
No.
You know, that's the Democrats are holding up the Farm Bill. The Farm Bill expires today. And we got our bill through the 24, 3 months ago. Through the House, and Schumer won't pick it up. We can't even get the text for the Farm Bill because it's a very, very good bill, and they don't want it to pass because then Republicans get a win on food in the election year. Okay, big deal. HR2 is if HR2 had been implemented when we passed it, the chances of these crimes happening again and again and again would have been radically reduced. But the Democrat Party didn't want to pass it because it is a great bill, and they didn't want to give Republicans a victory in an election year. And we have to stop doing that. There's a chart. Someone produced it. My phone's out there. They're trying to embarrass me, say I'm this right-wing guy. If you look at that scatter chart, by a factor of 20%, I'm the most bipartisan. So like almost 70% of all the bills that I've gotten through or co-signed are bipartisan bills. The next person hovers around 50%. It's Glenn Grothman. Because we approach things pragmatically. Like just the way Kyle handed himself on that stage, it wasn't Republican, it wasn't Democrat, it wasn't independent. He was a cop talking about public safety in his community, right? That's where we should be. And Congress has to get to the same spot so we don't have these arguments. I mean, why in the hell would 158 Democrats vote to not deport people that are convicted of sexually assaulting people in the United States? Why would you do that for politics? I'm done with that. Actually, I never started it. So it's frustrating from my level. I get it. We want to make sure that Kyle and everybody has what they need to do, but we can't force the executive branch under the Biden-Harris administration to do their job now. They're just not doing it. And we can't, because we're a co-equal branch of government, force them to do so.
We're talking with Representative Derek Van Orden and Prairie du Chien Police Chief Kyle Tienor. Thanks for joining us today, guys. I feel like you've joined us with Coffee with Kyle. Kyle, we talk every week. This was probably the most serious conversation all three of us have had.
By far.
Felt a little weird.
You know what? When it's here in Prairie,
It is.
Yeah. To me, I'm just throwing this out from a Chiefs standpoint. Of the topics in our community, this is number one. Like, you can't. Years ago, I investigated a homicide in my career, and I said then, I'll probably never have another homicide in 20 years, right? But these deaths continue, and in my mind, they're preventable. Like, we need to get a handle on this and keep loved ones where they belong with their families. And yeah. And that's my red, blue. I've said this before on my radio show. We don't respond to only homes that have back the blue signs in their front yard. That's not what we do. Everybody's life matters, and that is incumbent upon me as a police chief to make sure that we're doing everything possible from the local, state, and national level to keep our citizens safe.
Period.
Period. Way right. to go. It's not Coffee with Kyle. I felt like it was Coffee with Kyle. Good grief. We're talking with Representative Derek Van Orden, Prairie du Chien Police Chief Kyle Tinor. Thank you both for joining me.
Thanks for having us.